This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Good afternoon, St. Louis, DGS on KMOX. Happy Thanksgiving Eve. Pretty day out there. So we are obviously here today. Off tomorrow, I think we're playing a best of. And then on Friday, Rammer's going to be here with Michael Claiborne, so they'll be doing the show all 4 hours. That's what's going on with us. We're back, obviously, on Monday. Tons and tons of news today. You probably know by now, unless you've been in a meeting or something or taking a nap, but it's an all-guilty verdict in the Ahmaud Arbery case. There is some not guilties. We'll get into that at the bottom of the hour with Chet Pleben. But as far as being responsible for Aubrey's death, all three defendants were found guilty and are going to jail for a very, very long time. Also, it appears to be true that the NFL is going to be paying the city of St. Louis and the county $790 million. And we've been kind of talking about that off the air. We'll talk some more about that on the air. Mike Claiborne's going to join us later to talk sports, and I'm sure he'll be talking about that. I just got my booster and a flu shot. So did Trish. Rach got a booster. It's a big day.
Yep. And we donated $500 to Operation Food Search because yesterday we went to visit Dave's mom, took a really nice picture, and told the audience if you give us 1,000 likes by the end of the show, we'll donate this money. And they did that, and overnight we got another 1,000 likes. So it's really exciting, really cool.
They love
the pic.
Very,
very cool. Very nice.
They love your mom.
Yeah, what's not to love? And we also got KFC for lunch downstairs. That was pretty big.
It was good.
And how?
Am I missing anything? Those are the top stories?
I think those are the
top. I think
basically
KFC should have been number one, but
I already feel sick. I know it's probably not possible, but I'm already feeling weird.
It's all up here.
I know. Suddenly you're a doctor. Like you, all day you've been feeling your oats. So let's $1 billion, basically. Or you know, we already have $500 million coming in. By the time we pay the attorneys, we'll have another $500 million. So that's $1 billion. Wouldn't you think that $1 billion would be enough to make a city like St. Louis well?
Where does the money go exactly? I'm really unclear about that. Do we know yet?
I'm not sure anyone knows. I mean, no one in this room knows, but a big chunk will go to the city. A big chunk will go to the county. I think it'll just go into their coffers.
Is it wrong that I'm just feeling really negative about it? Like, well, nobody's going to ever see this money and we're not going to do anything good with it.
No, that's how I feel.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it's.
I think we have reason to feel that way.
Yeah, it's tended to work that way in the past.
It's it would be hard for me to think of the last good decision the city government made. You know, I can think of a lot of bad ones. And I hate to be just so pessimistic, but when you have an opportunity like that, when you have so much money coming in and very few people feel like it's going to do anything, like, what does that say about your city? Like, isn't it'd be like if you won the lottery in your family and everyone goes, well, dad's just going to blow it. You know, it's not a good indication of how the family's going.
Yeah.
Where do you guys think the money should go?
It depends on where it can go. I mean, like you said, if it just goes into everybody's coffers, it's really hard to know how to revive downtown. But it kind of makes sense, right? Because that's where they played. That's, you know, where the Edward Jones Dome is, where they stopped playing. Maybe they could just try to, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a politician. I'm not like a city zone or whatever. But doesn't it make sense to make it really affordable to like rent office space or retail space downtown to drive more businesses to want to be down here. So then maybe we'd have more foot traffic in general. Like if it becomes a cooler place because there's an incentive for businesses to settle here, that could really help a lot.
Mm-hmm. The first thing I would do would be how much of this is it going to take to get the police department staffed up, the city safe, and what are we going to do about the homeless?
Not going to happen.
And then go from there.
Mm-hmm. Tashara Jones is already, with the $500 million, they said, okay, a good part of this, Madam Mayor, has to go to the police. And she's agreed to do it, but only when it comes to mental health for the police. So nothing wrong with mental health for the police.
No.
They have a really hard job,
but it's
not the first priority when no one will come downtown because they're afraid of all the crime.
I mean, that to me just seems the obvious first thing to fix. Mm-hmm. How are we going to fix the crime? And then your ideas are going, sorry, I just held my cup with ice right up to the microphone. And then the homeless problem.
Yeah.
Put an emphasis on my statement.
Well, that much money, you could... You know, they're talking about giving $500 to these, you know, this person, that person, the poorest 10,000.
Which will do nothing.
You can give a lot of homeless people a lot of money. I don't think that's what you should
do. Yeah, but I think the homeless, the unhoused problem would take care of a lot of the perceived crime. Like, there's real crime, and then there's perceived crime as far as, like, that person looks terrifying, and there's 15 of them loitering around a statue downtown that makes me not want to walk down that block.
Let me ask a
difficult
question.
If you can break that
up,
that's a huge...
Do people who don't live in the really bad parts of town, like Jeffrey Boyd's always talking about in the 22nd, do people who don't live there really care about it? Or do we just care about downtown?
Well, I think we do because we're down here a lot, but... I see what you're saying, and yeah, it's probably like, oh, and it's just an excuse not to come down here for a lot of people, I think. But
yeah.
I also think that they would come down here if you weren't afraid of getting shot or robbed or carjacked. You know, perception's reality, and that's the perception.
It just seems to me, and maybe it's just me, but it seems to me like when it's the news and it's like far north St. Louis or it's one of the state streets down south and there's a shooting or a murder or something that you kind of go, wow, that sucks. But when it's downtown, somewhere that you might go, then it's like, oh my gosh, going to hell in a handbasket. And I'm just not sure that you can just draw a circle around downtown and say, we're going to put a dome over this. And everyone from the county is going to feel good. And everyone from Oakville is going to feel good. Just don't go into North City because they're kind of on their own. You know what I mean?
I don't know. Every city has problems. Every city has crime. Every city has some sort of what we're talking about, but they manage to do it and they manage to make their downtown thrive. So, I mean, I'm sure at some point we've talked to other cities, but I don't know, a week long hold up in a room. Can we figure something out? I mean, we just talk about it and talk about it and talk about it and nothing ever changes.
Well, I mean, if you go to Indianapolis, you go to Nashville, you go to Louisville, you go to Denver, it's just nicer. I mean, you don't have to put too fine of a point on it.
Just pleasant to look at
It's just nicer.
Because it's actually populated. It's just a ghost town down here. It was bad before, but COVID has just completely driven out. You know, the people that worked down here were the lifeblood of downtown. And when you take that away, now it's, I mean, to me, the biggest problem is blocks of abandoned buildings and nothing's going on. Like, during the daytime, I could walk here from here to the arch by myself and I'd probably be okay, but I would be really alert, you know, whereas if there are a lot of people downtown, I walk around because if something happens, there's other people there. It's intimidating when you walk down the street and it's like, let's say I got mugged right now. If I screamed, no one's going to hear me like anywhere. And I can't even run into a business and ask for help because that skyscraper is empty and that skyscraper is empty. I think we need to drive business down here, and it can't just be, you know, Ballpark Village does well and Busch Stadium and Enterprise Center, but you can't have a Blues game every single night.
Yeah.
So how do we get people to want to hang out down here?
Well, being a former business owner, I wouldn't have put Foxpaw down here because I don't want to give up 1% of the tax. To be in a place I don't want to be that's crime-ridden and full of a bunch of fools, but they're going to take 1% of all of my money. I mean,
Yeah, can we suspend that for 5 years since we're getting all this money, you know?
And also to your point about you can't walk, let's say, from our building, which is at Olive and Tucker, down to Shodo. There's nothing to do in between.
Yeah.
Like, there's no business or shop or boutique.
Now, Rach brings up a good point. I hadn't really thought of it before. Like, I have walked back by myself from the baseball game to here at night. I wasn't afraid, but I also wasn't super comfortable. But you could be attacked in broad daylight downtown and have no one see it.
Yeah, because there's nobody here.
And yeah, show me another downtown where that could happen. Like Charlie said the other day, he was looking out the window and he's like, I don't see anyone. There's not one person. And that's kind of the way it is.
Well, and especially for out-of-towners, you know, when they start walking the street, there's like, which way do we go? Where is everything downtown?
I always say, like, nothing. I feel so bad for people who are like, we're going to stay the night in downtown St. Louis and just walk around and see what's going on. Like, you made the wrong choice.
Yeah, just stay in your hotel room.
Well,
watch some soccer, watch some ghost hunters.
Here's the thing, too. Let's do just like put a dome over downtown. It's not that big, you know? And if you're downtown much at all, it's one of those talking on both sides of your mouth kind of thing, because I want to see progress, and progress means work. But for anyone who drives downtown, you literally can't go more than a block without a bunch of guys digging up, you know, a giant hole, and you have to turn around, go the other way, and half of them are one-way streets. Like, I've been down here since 1990, and it's confusing. If you just come down here for tourism, man. It is what I'm trying to say is it's not a visitor friendly city.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if a lot of this can be pinned on when we lost the Rams. I wonder, like, if there's smart people out there who can say, oh yeah, a lot of businesses were hit whenever we lost our NFL team. Because, I mean, that's a big deal. All those Sundays that you no longer have people coming down to the dome and going and sitting. I mean, I know there were like bars downtown that shut down because of it. Mm-hmm. I wonder how much of that, you know, is part of the lawsuit as far as you lost this much business for our downtown area. I'm sure we can trace many of these problems back to that. It's not the only thing, but it's a huge chunk.
What I say is truly meaningless, not just because I have no authority, but I don't have any training at this. I'm just a guy that observes. But I said a couple weeks ago, if we don't turn this around, the city is kind of dead in 5 years. 10 at the outside. It'll just be a ghost town. And this is our last best chance. We have $1 billion coming in kind of out of nowhere between COVID and this lawsuit. It's kind of just found money. It's not like we have to pay back a bunch of money that Kroenke's going to give us. So shame on us. If we get $1 billion tax-free and we can't make it matter, we don't deserve it then, you know? We'll talk to Chet about the Aubrey case. We'll be talking to Mike Claiborne about all of this coming up. Welcome back, DGS. Happy Thanksgiving Eve. Chris, what's up with the TV dinners?
They came out of Thanksgiving. 1953 it was that Swanson miscalculated. Andrew, you'll like this. And they had 260 tons of frozen turkey extra from the holidays. So they were sitting around in a meeting and one of the salesmen suggested packaging them into trays and freezing them. And that's how we got the TV dinner.
I'd actually heard that before.
And we never had ours. He brought some in, but we never had them.
Yeah, we never doused the sodium-filled TV dinner in more salt and sat around and had it together.
Still got them.
That was somebody's mistake. That's how the TV dinners were born.
Rach, you were happy with the Hardee's experience today?
I was so happy. So yesterday we told the audience, okay, we're going to donate $500 if we can get to 1,000 likes. And the audience crushed it. It really makes me happy. And the amount of like sweet comments on the photo was really, really sweet. So today, before I came into work, I went by the Hardee's on Hampton Avenue here in St. Louis. And you know, most people are donating a dollar, so I didn't know if it was going to be like a pain to donate $500. And by the way, you can go through the Operation Food Search website and donate too. I just wanted to do it through Hardee's because we're partnering with them.
So you didn't order anything, right?
I didn't. I just made the donation. So I'm like, oh, I hope this goes okay because, I don't know, it's COVID and it seems like we've talked on the show a million times. It just seems like nothing works anymore and everything's difficult. But I walked into the lobby and told them, like, hey, my coworkers and I wanted to make a donation. They're like, great. I said, it's for $500. And the girl at the register goes, okay, let me get my manager. So a manager immediately comes up, makes it happen. My Chase card got declined because they thought it was fraud to spend $500 at
parties.
So then got out the Visa and everything was fine. And she gave me a big stack of stickers. And she would just like looked me in the eye and like so genuinely was like, we appreciate this so much. Thank you so much.
That's nice.
It was just a great interaction. Like I said, it's nice when something works and goes smoothly and isn't. I don't know. It just feels like things are so stressful. And this has been a positive experience from beginning to end as far as this deciding to donate that money.
Yeah.
And all the feedback from the listeners. And the manager at Hardee's probably doesn't listen to the show, has no idea what we did, but she was just excited that someone was making a donation to Operation Food Search. So yeah. It was
and
really
it's cool because
neat.
That money does affect Thanksgiving, right? Because
yeah.
She made it today.
Yes.
Yeah, that's I mean, equal to $5,000 at OFS.
I don't think it's overstating things to say that we're all pretty thirsty for some just good things, you know?
Yeah.
And like yesterday, I have to thank you guys. Yesterday was a really, really good day for me. I don't have social media. I hate social media. I've seen lots of mean stuff about the show or me on social media. I don't like it. And anytime someone has like their Twitter or their Facebook open, I just avoid it because I'm, you know, like being on 97.1 the past few years during the Trump years, you can imagine the kind of messages we were getting. And it's just really nice to see, you know, a bunch of messages that are just nice. About a 94-year-old woman, you know. Speaking of that 94-year-old woman, she was going to be alone for Thanksgiving tomorrow. We're all going to go over on Saturday. But, you know, she says she didn't care. But I'm going to go over early and be with her. And so she doesn't want to cook. I don't want to cook. So I called my buddy Jeff Dill over at Capitol Grill and said, can you put together a couple of Thanksgiving dinners for me and my mom? You know Jeff Dill. He's like, done. I'm going to blow it out. Don't worry about it. And so I called my mom. I'm like, hey, good news. I'm going to be over, be in there about noon. And she's like, well, I don't want to cook. I'm like, nope, I'm bringing you Capitol Grill Thanksgiving. And she goes, I don't want any turkey.
In your mom's defense, she did mention yesterday that she would not be wanting turkey this year.
Did she really? I didn't catch that.
She mentioned it when we were sitting around the table. She said, I don't want any turkey this year.
Your mom said that?
No, yours.
Oh.
What is the Capitol Grill Thanksgiving? Was it going to be turkey?
Trish learned more about my mom in one cigarette than I have in the past 20 years. That must have been a hell of a smoke. You're just telling me all like what she watches on television.
Yeah, because I wanted to know if she watches TV all day. I wanted to know if she just watches the news or if she likes scripted programs. So she watches the news a lot, but she likes the show Mom, that scripted show with Allison Janney.
My parents love Mom.
Yeah, she likes Mom too. She said it's on every night.
Never heard of it. So, Rach, you're saying the Brian Landry thing?
Yeah, so it turns out, according to his autopsy, he died by suicide by a single gunshot. And I don't think it's the most important story in the country, but you know what? 2 months ago, it sure was. And it was all anybody could talk about was Gabby Petito, Brian Landry, nothing like this has ever happened, wall-to-wall coverage. And now that both of the players are out of the equation and we're getting actual answers, it's just like, yeah, it was suicide. So anyway, did you see this other thing? I don't know. It's just an indicator of like when the story's hot, there's nothing more important on the planet and we will obsess and we will hyperfixate. When it dies out a little bit, not as much.
Because I think most people don't care about the people.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't think they cared about Gabby Petito. They couldn't give a rat's ass less. I don't think that they like are glad that she's dead, but I don't think they really care about her. They care about her as a character on a forensics file that's playing out in front of them live. And then when that's over with, they go find another one.
Yeah, they thought they were a part of the search. Like, people actually thought they were involved in this case.
Yeah.
Like, with searching for him and finding him and looking at videos. It's like we have to be a part of everything.
It's given me one more thing to worry about, though, having a 16-year-old daughter. You know, she has a boyfriend. He seems nice. I like him. You know, we spend a lot of time together, but it's just tough.
That took a turn.
We're talking about a dead girl whose boyfriend killed her.
I know.
I mean, making some accusations here.
No. I'm saying, like, just having a daughter of dating age is not, I never worried about it before.
Yeah.
It wasn't here.
I wonder how much her family was worried about him or if he was just like the perfect gentleman whenever he was around them.
Yeah,
well,
that's
you could tell from those like few minutes with the cops that he was full of crap.
Yeah.
I mean, in good ways and bad ways, I'm sure. You know, you could just tell he was a charmer.
He
thought quickly on his feet and he was just, you know, his pulse must have been 60 when he was talking to the cops. So I don't know. They hadn't seen Gabby in a long time, right? So there was obviously something going on.
Yeah, she lived across the country at that point.
Welcome back, DGS 234. Happy Thanksgiving Eve. So the Aubrey verdict is in. Chet Pleben joins us now. Hello, Chet.
Hello, Dave.
So, Chet, if you can, go through with us, just in case there are people out there getting in their cars or getting home who don't know what happened, go through the verdicts and kind of fill us in on what that actually means.
Yeah, this is a little more complicated than the way in which we do it in Missouri. So you had 9 counts, charges ranging from a malicious murder, felony murder, aggravated assault, false imprisonment, and criminal attempt to commit a felony, namely false imprisonment. So in Georgia, those 9 counts, everybody, all the defendants are charged both individually and as parties in all 9 counts. So for Greg McMichaels on the charge of malicious murder, he, along with Brian, were both found not guilty because Travis was the one who pulled the trigger on the shotgun. On the felony murder, what happens is those are counts 2, 3, 4, and 5. So 2 and 3 relate to the aggravated assault. Guilty for everybody with the exception of Brian in that one, and false imprisonment, that's count 4, and then count 5 is the criminal attempt to commit a felony. So for felony murder, every crime that you commit, every underlying crime, whether it be assault or robbery or whatever it might be, where that death results, that's what determines whether felony murder is applicable. Counts 6 and 7 pertain to the aggravated assault. Count 6 pertains to the use of the shotgun. And count 7 pertains to the use of the trucks, assaulting him, both Greg's truck as well as Brian's truck. And then count 9 pertains to the chase with the trucks, and that's the criminal attempt to commit a felony. So everybody's guilty of most things with the exception of Brian and Greg, who are not guilty of malicious murder. And the felony murder Brian is not guilty of that because that pertains to the shotgun, which he never had. And he's also not guilty of the aggravated assault. This is Brian again, because it pertains to the shotgun, which he wasn't involved with. But everybody is guilty of everything else. It's a strange way to charge. You kind of lump them all together. If you're going to charge a conspiracy, I guess this is tantamount to charging some kind of a conspiracy.
So, Chad, as I understand it, the judge is going to be the one to sentence the defendants.
Yes.
Typically, would they be sentenced to just the largest sentence and everything else is going to run concurrently, or do you think that possibly they'll stack them all and they'll all end up in life, in jail for life?
Yeah, it will. Here's really the only choice that this judge is going to have to make. Either it's going to be life without the possibility of probation or parole, or life with the possibility of probation and parole. I mean, that's it. That's the bottom line. I mean, you can look at whatever each of these counts might have in 20 years or whatever, but that's going to be the bottom line.
So for the dad, it's a death sentence because the dad's probably in his 60s.
No question.
Yeah. And I mean, none of them are spring chickens, but are you surprised that the third guy, the guy who was filming, could go away for the rest of his life? Or is that just the way it goes when you do something like this and you're involved in a felony murder?
Well, I thought that he had the best possible defense to this. I mean, remember, this is a guy that actually did the video. He's the guy that took the video that led to these convictions for all of them. I mean, that, how do you lie with a video? And I think he thought, as we said yesterday, I was under the impression, I believe, that he was going to be a prosecution witness. And lo and behold, no, he wasn't. Now, it was his lawyer that kept making these goofy objections about Sharpton being in the room and the black ministers being in the room and all this sort of craziness. I'm not sure what it was that he hoped to accomplish with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're, you know, saying that you want a mistrial or you want to change a venue because of this, that, or the other, and you're trying to make a record, that's one thing. But this judge, what did he want? This judge to kick those people out of a public courtroom? I mean, that was just silly. I didn't quite understand it.
Yeah, I saw that guy on TV last night, and you just see through people. I mean, you only have to watch about 10 seconds, and you get a pretty good idea who this guy is.
Yeah, I mean, ridiculous. And this Laura Hogue, she's the one with the dirty toenails. She made a comment after the verdict that she was floored with a capital F. I don't know what trial she was watching.
Yeah,
but I certainly wasn't floored. I mean, this is what I expected. The only hope, the only glimmer of hope, I thought was Brian. And frankly, I think that his lawyer never made an opening statement. He never put that defense out there until the end in his closing argument. And I think by that time, it was too late. I mean, I think he should have been separated from the McMichaels clan. And I think he could have done that right from the opening statement and laid out that defense. He didn't do it.
Could he use that as an appeal then? You just said? No.
Well,
if there's a
post-conviction way down the road after the appeals are exhausted, ineffective assistance of counsel and a habeas on that, they could. But again, you know, that's not one of those things where, you know, he didn't call a witness or he missed some evidence or whatever. It was a calculated, strategic decision, I'm sure, on his part, just as it was that Brian never testified. And, you know, rather than having Travis testify, and I know that wasn't Brian's lawyer's choice, but, you know, Brian could have testified as well. He would have been the guy, I guess, that most likely, if anybody, probably should have testified to separate himself from the pack.
So, Chad, I don't know how much you know about this, but you know more than I do. It looks as if the Rams, Kroenke, are going to settle with the city and the county for about $790 million. Thoughts, analysis?
I think it was a good move because, as you know, Dave, there's no sure thing when you go to trial. Now, I think from what I understand about the evidence that the plaintiffs would present, I think they had a very good, very, very good case to establish liability. The question of damages, and certainly they had a good venue. They're in the city of St. Louis, and Chris McGraw is a very good judge. But you go to the question of damages. And so this isn't like an auto accident case where you have medical and you have doctors' bills and whatnot, and then you have pain and suffering that the jury can go ahead and award. But this is a case where you can quantify what your compensatory damages are, and those are damages that you're entitled to, that you sustain because of the behavior of Kroenke and the behavior of the NFL, et cetera, and moving out to California. So those are kind of finite numbers. And then you have beyond that, you've got the question of punitive damages. And seemingly this judge was going to let them go ahead and argue and instruct on punitive damages, which are designed to punish the wrongdoer. So, you know, that's a crapshoot. You don't know how the jury is going to react to an amount as it relates to punitive, assuming that you get past the liability, assuming that they award some actual damages. So, you know, it's a crapshoot. You know, you don't have an absolute number on the punitive aspect. So I think 790 is, in my opinion, is tough to walk away from. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things where if you think your case is worth $1 million and you're being offered, you know, $10,000, that's an easy case to try. But if you're offered, you know, $900,000 or $750,000, that's a tough thing to walk away from.
And then, Chad, don't you think that obviously everything you just said is true and important, but my guess is that the NFL owners, including Kroenke, but especially the other guys who didn't do anything wrong, what they're worried about is going through a trial where they have to open up their books, they have to divulge everything, and just like the way Trump fights tooth and nail, they're fighting tooth and nail, and it's worth $1 billion to them to keep everything secret.
No question about it. And that's why I said from the beginning of this, I never thought that this case would actually go into a courtroom for that very reason. All the dirty secrets of the NFL, all the shenanigans that they pull will be laid out in public view. And on December the 3rd, remember, December 3rd was the show cause hearing for whether or not Judge McGraw was going to hold these characters in contempt because they didn't bother to turn over their financial records, for which they were fined $24,000 to date and I think $25,000 in additional legal fees. So it's no mystery to me that this case was settled on the eve almost of December the 3rd, which could be an extreme embarrassment to them. And plus, this case didn't get a lot of national publicity. I think it will now, but it didn't. Imagine the publicity it would have gotten had it gone to trial. Yeah. And then you have the other thing, the indemnification agreement that Kroenke signed, that now he's fighting with his brethren that he shouldn't have to reimburse them for legal fees and whatnot.
All right, man. Have a great Thanksgiving. We appreciate it.
Thanks. You too.
DGS. Happy Thanksgiving Eve. Speaking of food, Rach, what's going on with my twin, Paul Hollywood, on British baking?
Okay, so if you watch Great British Baking Show, you know that if a baker contestant achieves the perfect bake, they are rewarded with a handshake from Paul Hollywood, and it's always a big deal, and everybody freaks out. Well, and I think it was in last week's episode, Paul gave out three handshakes for the same bake. It was absolutely thrilling. But he did an interview with, I think, like the Hollywood Reporter and said, look, it's getting harder and harder to know when to hand out the handshakes. There's probably times I should have given it and I decided not to. And maybe a couple I gave that maybe they weren't the best. And it feels so arbitrary and I'm tired of people getting upset. So I think this is the last season we're doing the handshakes. Aww. I'm just getting rid of it. Which I understand how it's disappointing, but I'm sitting here going, good for you, Paul. If it's causing you grief in your personal life, like people are giving you crap about the handshakes, get rid of them. You don't have to keep doing it just because you initially did it. I'm happy for him.
Disagree.
What do you think? You like the handshake?
It's a show. And people know it, and it intrigues people, and I got excited when you gave the third handshake. And suck it up, Buttercup. It makes you nervous who to give a handshake to who's baking a friggin' pie. Like, grow up.
It's dead serious. So.
People like that part of the show.
Do you know, like, on any of those competition shows, do they get to bring some recipes with them? Do you know?
Yeah.
Because it just, I'm like, how do they know how to do like half this stuff?
No, I think they get what their signature and their showstopper challenges are in advance so they can plan their recipes.
Okay.
So they're not planning it on the fly. And they talk about the practice tent. So I guess when they have downtime, they can go and
practice
perfect different parts of their bake. Yeah.
Is Paul Hollywood his real name?
Yeah, I think so.
That's what he goes by.
He's a handsome man.
He used to do the show with a woman named Mary Berry.
Which so
it was
I love Mary
Berry and Paul Hollywood.
Let me understand something. I don't even know who it was, but it's a fairly big thing. It's a big article out there that we need to stop the toxic language of burning off calories. And like this time of year, it's very, very common to say like, oh, well, you know, I'm going to really strap it on Thanksgiving, but then I'm going to burn it off over the weekend. I'm going to exercise a lot. And this big article opinion was, this is toxic. This is harmful. This is hurting people, not just Thanksgiving. But in general, talking about using exercise to burn off the food you eat is toxic and it needs to go away.
I'm not getting this.
They say that you should exercise because it makes you, this person, you should exercise because it makes you feel good, not because it burns calories.
Nobody
and when you link it to burning calories. You're saying that if you have extra weight, you're somehow less worthy than people who don't have extra weight.
I think we're looking too far into these things.
I mean,
nobody, I don't know a lot of people who work out because it makes them feel great. I mean, maybe afterwards, but no one's saying, let me get on that treadmill for an hour and run as fast as I possibly can. And while my knees hurt, and boy, doesn't this feel great.
Yeah, if our bodies didn't work that way, you know, if you really could, like eating food had nothing to do with the amount of fat in your body, would anyone work out? Like, if we all just had really nice bodies, that was just a thing?
Well, that's the thing. Isn't that kind of the, like, primary motivator behind exercise, working out?
This was an opinion piece on the Huffington Post, so it's all clicking now because they're always writing dumb things like this. So they spoke to an expert that says, food doesn't need to be an emotional or a moral experience. You are allowed to just have it. Which, okay, yeah, but I think whenever you get emotional about someone saying, let's burn off those calories, you're making it into an emotional experience. Like, it's not wrong to want to lose weight. It's not wrong to want to look a certain way and be fit. There's nothing morally wrong with having a goal for your body. It's morally wrong if you look at a person with extra weight on them and go like, I'm better than you because I do this and you don't choose to do this and you are less worthy of a human. That's wrong. But for someone to have a personal goal and want to look out to work out to look fit, it's their body and they can do what they want with it.
I think it's analogous to like people who are interested in investing their money. And if you say, you know what, you really shouldn't link investing money and saving with a better lifestyle because that hurts people who don't have a lot of money. Well, it'd be different if you're going to a poor person's house, knocking on their door and laughing at them. But
right. The
fact that it is available to you if you like, and there are services that say, hey, if you think you'd be happier to have more money, I can help you do that. Hey, if you think you'd be happier with less fat and a little more muscle and, you know, better aerobic abilities, I can help you with that. You don't have to do it. You don't have to partake in it. But the very fact that someone is offering it is now offensive to some of these people.
Everything's taken to the extremes. Like you can say no to a lot of these things. It's when it becomes an obsession or unhealthy with either one that we're talking about where it becomes a problem. And that's only a select few. I mean, the majority of us get the logic of it. And some people need help with that, and that's not bad.
So Kyle, switching topics, but we only have a couple minutes here. Kyle Rittenhouse is 18, so I guess he's a grown-up now. He can do what he wants to do. But everyone wants a piece. Everyone at Fox News wants a piece of Kyle Rittenhouse. And he was flown down to Mar-a-Lago to meet with the president, whose quote was, he's a fan, of course.
Saw the picture.
Does it just seem gross to anyone else that I still consider him a kid at 18? Again, although he's legal. Just everyone just wants to photo op with him.
They're using him.
Why? And look, you killed two people. You walked away from it because of your self-defense, strategy, which I happen to agree with. But how about just go and live in a quiet life?
Or get him some help instead of using him and parading him to promote your agenda, which I don't even get the connection or how that would promote your agenda.
Yeah.
But get the kid some help. If you really care about him.
Well, let's be real. A lot of people admire Kyle Rittenhouse because they think that more people should have been out with guns shooting people in light of last summer's protests. It actually doesn't have that much to do with self-defense. It's about, I mean, if you go look at any comment section on Twitter or Facebook, it's all, well, maybe if people weren't out acting like this, you wouldn't have to go out with guns and shoot people. That's the real draw to having your photo taken with him. It's not, yay, he defended himself. It's, you did what we wanted to do.
Yeah, you did the thing that we were too scared to go out and do, which is essentially incite a full-scale war between rioters and people who did.
So again, going back to like Gabby Petito and Brian Laundrie, no one really cares about them. No one really cares about this 18-year-old kid. He's just a piece on the chess piece that, hey, I can grab this. I can get a picture. I can get a little bit of cachet.
Because look at the people who are doing that. People like Matt Gaetz. You know what I mean? The people whose entire lives are around. What's the next dumb stunt that I can do for some kind of cachet?
And that being said, I have heard plenty of Republican pundits on 97.1, on KMOX, saying, like, we shouldn't celebrate this kid. His own lawyer said, I wish I would have never met Kyle Rittenhouse because that would have meant that these people wouldn't have died. So there are plenty of people standing up and doing the right thing, but there are ghouls out there who just want to make a splash.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app. Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.